Hey, if you're hearing that sound, you know it's a fifth Monday, because every time the month gives us a fifth Monday, we have a special edition of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives is looking at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. And we are so glad to have you here this morning. We want to thank the First Church of Christ Scientist Mill Valley for bringing us to you this morning. But we have a fascinating guest to talk to this morning. We're talking about healing from a spiritual perspective, a deep and profound level of healing. So this is Scout Bartlett. We're originating out of our flagship station, KEST, in San Francisco. We're available worldwide on www.ifidknownthen.com or www.kestradio.com. So let me give you a little bit of a story this morning. Our guest describes being in first grade, and a relative had told his father about Christian Science. As it turns out, a couple of months later, he had a life-changing event occur. One weekend, he and his father were skiing up near Albuquerque, New Mexico, on Sandia Peak. Long time ago, ski equipment wasn't quite designed as carefully as it is now. He was traversing across the hill, and our guest fell, and his leg spun completely around without the binding releasing. He says, "I remember lying there in the snow crying, this is young, and seeing a ski patrolman stop right near me. Through my tears, I asked him to spin my leg back around. He wouldn't, of course, concerned that he might injure him further. Finally, they got the ski off, and his father transported him down the hill and got him into the car. He was still crying and noticed his leg was bent at a very funny angle. Though they'd only learned Christian Science a short time before, his father and he, little guy, felt a confident desire to turn to prayer right away. So he says, "I remembered so well sitting in our living room, right there on the floor with my leg on a pillow. My brother was there, too, watching television. And I remember my father praying quietly and reading the Bible and Mary Baker Eddy's book, Science and Health with Keys to the Scriptures. What happened next changed his life completely." So I think that's an interesting place to let that one go for a moment. Everybody, I would like to introduce you to a gentleman who's dedicated his life to spiritual healing practices and prayer, to helping others recognize their spiritual level individually and in groups. Everybody, I'd like to introduce you to Mark Swinney. Mark, this is everybody.
Great to be here.
Great. Glad to have you here, Mark. Why don't you go ahead and finish out that story? There you are on the living room floor. Your brother's watching television. Your father's praying, reading the Bible, and Mary Baker Eddy's Science and Health and Keys to the Scripture. And then what happened?
Well, you know, I can remember it as if it was yesterday, because I was looking over at my father. You know, he was praying for me. And at first, I really didn't want to have anything to do with it, because I don't know, it was such a bad day. I still was mad at the ski patrolman, you know. I just was unhappy about the whole thing. But you know how it is sometimes. You love your parents so much. And I remember looking over at my dad. I could tell he was just praying with his whole heart. And I didn't know what he was praying about. I didn't know what really, you know, where he was going with this. But I decided that whatever he was doing, however he was praying, I would just give in to it all the way. And that's what I did. You read that moment was kind of a life-changing moment, and it really was, because
oh boy.
I remember my brother was there, you know, watching TV in the living room, too. And, you know, I didn't even think about it. I just stood up and walked across the living room and walked over and turned the channel on the TV. And I was just completely whole, completely fine. I was healed. And it has remained that way since. And I'll tell you, I'll never forget that moment. It felt like a big deal, but it also felt just very natural. But from then on, whenever I was in trouble about anything, all I wanted was prayer, because I'd never seen, you know, I'd never experienced anything like that. I was just a kid. I think I was in about first grade. And so I was just having a first grader's life, just the normal thing as a first grader would have. And then all of a sudden, this happened. And you can imagine, that would definitely kind of have a shift in your life.
Whew. I know those kinds of events, and not even that big, but I know they stick with us forever. I was reading some notes, Mark, and one of the things that you've referred to is a quote from Mary Baker Eddy that I just found fascinating, and I thought it'd be a great place to jump off this morning. The physical healing of Christian Science results now, as in Jesus' time, from the operation of divine principle, before which sin and disease lose their reality in human consciousness and disappear as naturally and necessarily as darkness gives place to light and sin to reformation. Now, I know everybody listening, wouldn't it be nice if you could basically have your conscious and subconscious mind lose track of injury or disease as easily as you can lose track of car keys? So, first place I'd like to start with that whole phrase, Mark, is just the real simple phrase of divine principle. How would you talk to people that have not used that phrase before to describe what on earth that's talking about?
Well, I think everybody really is on a path to discover really the force of the universe, the God that is, just depending on what you call it, it's the overriding power. It's really what I would call, I just call it God. And I know that, you know, your listeners come from all sorts of, you know, traditions and thoughts about these things. And I'll tell you, you know, besides, like you said, I've spent a long time, you know, praying with people and helping people learn to pray for themselves. But I've also traveled quite a bit, talking, speaking, you know, giving speeches about this. And just in the last year, I've been on 4 different continents. And you know what I've noticed, Scout, is that people, I don't think God, this divine principle, I don't think God sees us as little groups, individualized, isolated, one from the other, you know, with different religious traditions. I think God sees us as one big flock, really. One big flock. The shepherd sees us as one flock, and, you know, I think that's how we need to remain, as one big group. So, when we think about words like principle or God, then I think we need to kind of step back from just the words that are so familiar for all of us, no matter where we come from. Those familiar words we'd use to describe God, and take it to more of actually making it tangible. I mean, I read the Bible quite a bit, and the words for God, like Father, Shepherd, Spirit, Love, they can become so familiar, I almost forget to feel the presence of God. And so what I like to do sometimes is just, I don't know, I go to different places as I travel, and I become conscious of this wonderful principle, this overriding power. It's an all-present love. And I just feel such love for God, such an appreciation for it. And so what you're talking about there in that quote, you know, how we look to divine principle, and you're way ahead of the game because you already identified how that power of God is there to change our thoughts. And that is that's the big turning point, because so often, I know when I first started praying, I just wanted God to change my body or change my school teacher or change some person, change something in my environment. When it turns out that the power of God operates in thought. And when God's power changes my thought, then that embraces everything that I experience.
Ooh, Mark, just say that again. The power of God operates in thought.
Yes. It's different from just depending on yourself or your own thoughts. It's when you open up to this wonderful power that is principle, that is love. And when that power transforms your thought, your perspective, then that embraces everything in your experience, everything you're praying about. It's now the power of God's behind it, not just your hopes or good wishes.
You know, there's another word in this sentence that I'd really love to explore. I have heard that the word sin, and I can't prove it, but I've heard that the word sin was originally an archery term, and all it really referred to was off the mark. And I found that I've adopted that, whether that's true or not, I've adopted that. But in that sentence that we read earlier is the word sin. Mark, where do you go with that word?
Good. You know, I've looked at that word from the same perspective. the archery term thing. And for the listeners, it kind of means that when an archer would be shooting at a target, if he missed the target, just a miss, that would be called a sin. And so that's kind of where our term for sin evolved. So a sin is really a miss. it's a mistaken thought. So, I'm sorry, go on.
I just said ah.
And so really, I don't think God is sort of like a stern school teacher standing in front of the blackboard keeping track of how many times we miss, how many times we miss the target. I really don't think that's what God's about. So often I meet people who really, the more they get involved with God and religion, the more guilty they end up feeling, because they're just using what they're learning to identify what they're doing wrong. You ever meet people like that?
Yep.
And so all they do is just look at what they're doing wrong. And that's really not what it's about. I find that I look at, Jesus' Beatitudes in the New Testament, or even the Ten Commandments. I use those to identify what I do right. And it takes a whole different mindset to change that way. You look at, you learn, what are the right models for thought? What are the ways to behave, think, and love one another? And when you do that, even if it's for 2 minutes in a day, throw confetti in the air, catch yourself doing it right. We know the sins, we know the misses, we know what it's like to be gruff to someone or to be fearful constantly. But when you feel that love of God and your oneness with God, even if it's for 30 seconds, well, you did hit the target then. And so you use that time to rejoice and say, boy, I did it right. Maybe I'll get 45 seconds tomorrow. But the more I find working with people, once they start watching and keeping track of what they're doing right rather than what they're doing wrong, their misses, once they keep track of what they're doing right, they grow so much more quickly. It's remarkable. Try it for a month and keep track of what you do right. If in a month you don't like it, go back to getting on your own case all the time. But no, just try it. In 2 weeks, you won't be the same person.
Now, Mark, we're airing originating on New Year's Eve Day, fresh in the morning, the last day of 2012, transformation of the Earth, etc. I know other folks will be listening at other times when replay, but this is still going to be so fresh. One of the things that you and I wanted to talk about this morning was a fresh look at setting priorities when you're looking into a new year. And of course, you can look into a new year any day of the year, your birthday, January 1st, or just, Tuesday, whatever, February something. So a fresh look at setting priorities. And I think you just led us right into there with one piece of setting priorities could be, okay, let me make it a practice of giving myself credit every time I have 2 seconds or 10 seconds of being on track or doing it right. Where else would you take people with this thought, Mark?
Boy, yes. Here it is, New Year's Eve, and this is one of the biggest priority-setting days of the year, for sure. And, isn't it funny? I think a lot of times, if you just watch TV, I guess people might get the impression that the biggest priorities are losing weight.
Keeping up with the Kardashians.
The year, I'm going to lose weight, or I'm going to stop smoking, or something like that. And those certainly are, viable priorities, and they're ones that people think a lot about. I've heard about doing an exercise about priorities, which is kind of an interesting exercise because people talk about priorities and what their priorities are, and sometimes I wonder how serious we really are about these priorities we set. I mean, the average person, you might ask him or her about what are the real priorities you want to set this coming year. And, sometimes it might be to have better physical fitness, like commercials say. Maybe have meaningful work or personal growth, or maybe more self-confidence this coming year, or maybe self-esteem, better relationships, or inner peace. I don't know. You know, all those kinds of things that people might set. Now, you can do this exercise. You might write down three of your big priorities, and then check by February or, you know, a few months later, and see how much those priorities are there in your life. You know, you might say, well, I really want to spend more quality time with my children. Well, if that's so, then are you doing it? Or when you come home, is that something you're actually doing, or are you too tired and you're going to do something else? It may be a priority on paper, but it's not a priority that you've internalized and actually are acting out. Now, I think, again, we're getting to the idea of feeling guilty and thinking, boy, I have got these priorities, and I'm not really doing it too well. Well, yeah, if you set a priority and you catch yourself doing it right, then, you know, bingo, you're moving in the right direction. So I myself, I don't know, you know, I've stepped back maybe to get a little bit bigger picture on priorities. And I would have to tell you, if you know, you and I, we just met, but if you and I knew each other for a lot of years, we would probably talk about this often. Jesus said that there are two priorities. He had two priorities that he felt were most important. One was something that he mentioned in the New Testament, but it's also talked about in the Old Testament, and that is to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and might. And the second priority is like it, he says, it's to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if most people in the world who know about, think about God, just no matter what religious tradition they come from, probably would say that the main priority is to love your neighbor as yourself. You know, treat others as you want them to be treated, love them that way. But it's actually, I don't think, the number one thing. You know, if you and I and all the listeners, let's say we had 10 seconds with Jesus, 10 seconds, we'd probably say to him, Jesus, quick, I got 10 seconds, what's most important? And he'd say, well, it's to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and might. And that idea of loving God that way is, well, it's huge. I know that for myself in the last 6 months, my love for God has grown more than ever. But, you know, here you are listening to a radio show about somebody's telling you to love God. And that sounds beautiful, and it sounds right, but, you know, how is that going to tie in to your everyday, you know, activity? And let me give you an example. Is that okay?
Sure. Yes, please.
Okay. You know, I'm from New Mexico. In fact, I'm calling you right now from New Mexico, but for several years, our family lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. We lived on the peninsula in Foster City. And I remember when I was a sophomore in high school, I went to San Mateo High School, my first real job was at a restaurant over at the Hillsdale Shopping Center. It was in the basement of Macy's. There was this big restaurant. It's not there anymore. Well, my first job that I had, I got hired as a dishwasher. That was my very first job. And this restaurant, boy, I tell you, it was really busy. And it was very tough for the dishwasher to keep up. You know, I would work as fast as I could, but I couldn't keep up. And by the end of the day, I remember the dishes had piled as high as, you know, Mount Fuji. And at the end of the day, what's worse is I remember the cooks brought all their pots and pans and put them on the pile. Well, I worked as hard as I could there. I remember after about 2 months, I really wasn't liking my dishwashing job too much. I really didn't like it. After 4 months, I started having this recurring thought as I worked, and even when I wasn't at work, I remember thinking to myself, boy, I just hate this job. I will be happy. I'll be happy once I get another job. And I would think this thought over and over. About 6 months into this job, I couldn't find any other job, and I just was ruminating all the time. Oh man, I'll be happy one day when I get another job. And so I remember, I'll never forget the day, about 8 months into it. Scout, I'm embarrassed to tell you this, but about 8 months into it, I finally decided to pray about it. Can you believe that? 8 months.
Well, funny how that works, isn't it?
I'm embarrassed to say it. I mean, here I'm somebody, you know, you heard about that healing, you know, when I was a little kid. Well, anyway, this day, sometimes, you know, when the dishes come out of the dishwasher, you know, you have to go, the dishwasher, the person who's the dishwasher moves the dishes into different places. And I remember I was setting some glasses up on a shelf. And so what I did was started praying. And as I'm kind of working, I'm taking these dishes out of this little rack that I carried over there, and I was putting them up on a shelf. And I just said, God, you know, I'm really unhappy here. I've got to set some priorities. I just can't keep going this way. I've got to make a change. And so I quietly, you know, listened, you know, inside as I was working. And that idea came to me that I should love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and might. And I remember that came very strong, and I could feel God's love right along with it. So I knew it was from God. And I remember thinking, as I heard that in my heart, I said, God, are you sure? I mean, look how busy I am. I can't add that to this. But I decided that, you know, I better show my gratitude for what I've given and figure out some way to make this big idea, love God, practical in a way that really I could internalize, really it makes sense to me. So here's what I did. First, I took all the glasses off the shelf of where I was putting them away. I took all the glasses, put them back in that container. I picked the first one up again, and as I moved it up onto the shelf, I just loved to do it. I just loved to do it. And then I picked up the next one, and I felt God's love for me. I picked up the third one, and I felt God's love just pouring out on everyone in the restaurant.
So
now, this
you
is
actually
a really
made,
big change.
So, Mark, you actually made putting those glasses back on the shelf into a physical practice of, I'm putting a glass on the shelf and I'm intentionally feeling that God's love all the way through everyone in the restaurant.
Exactly. That was a form of prayer, because now I'm making an idea kind of, I'm living it, I'm bringing it out. So, and I remember as I was doing that, if my thought wandered as I was putting a glass away, I would take the glass down, put it back in the rack, pick it up once more, feeling
Perfect.
God's love for me, feeling that love for everyone in the restaurant. Because if the rule is, if what's going to help me is to love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and might, I better just go for it. So, you know where I had to go once all those glasses were up on the shelf? I had to walk over to Mount Fuji, that pile of dishes. And, Scout, I'll tell you, I remember I picked up that first dish, and I put it in the rack, and I just loved to do it. Now, I continued doing this for about, 4 or 5 hours. I just was really enjoying this new way. It was really a different way to think. And I then remember the manager of the restaurant. He called me into his office, and I didn't know why, but he calls me in, and he says, Mark, how would you like to be a busboy? And I said, yes, sir, I would like that, because I knew the busboys got tips. We didn't have any waiters. And I remember as I turned to walk out of the office, I was kind of angry. I was angry with myself. I thought, why in the world had I waited 8 months to start loving God with all my heart, soul, mind, and might? Again, you know, you mentioned how when you allow the power of God to transform your whole thought, it embraces everything in your experience. And so I remember as busboy, I just continued on with my job. Now, my real job, it wasn't really busboy, it was loving God and bringing it out in everything I did. That was my real job, no matter what hat I wore.
Mm-hmm.
And,
That ends up being the bottom line when you can make your day-to-day movement be a part of your spiritual practice and bring yourself back to it.
Isn't that so? knowing. It's kind of like let's say you and I, Scout. Let's say we couldn't swim. We didn't know how to swim, and we went to the library and checked out all sorts of books about swimming, and then we sat next to a swimming pool in beach chairs and read those books to one another. After 2 years, all we've done is read the books. But if somebody then pushes us in the pool, we can't swim. All we've done is read about it. And what we need to do is practice it. So we take an idea in those books, you know, and then learn how to, and use it in our lives and swim, get in the pool and start to implement it. Right. And that's what's fun about setting these priorities. It's so much fun to take an idea and then and then make it how you actually live. It becomes your attitude.
Yes, perfect. Mark, we need to break away for just a second to identify the station, but there is so much I want to talk to you about. We're going to do this really, really quickly. I want to let everybody know that it's clear and crisp and cold outside. It's supposed to be dry. You can leave your umbrellas at home, but no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day for you to be having a great day on purpose. Yeah, you are listening to the special fifth Monday of the month, the fifth Monday of the month edition of Spiritual Perspectives. We want to thank the First Church of Christ Scientists of Mill Valley for bringing us Spiritual Perspectives this Monday and every fifth Monday when we have one. They invite you to join them or join any Church of Christ Scientists on their regular Sunday services or their weekday evening events. You can look them up online, the First Church of Christ Scientists, Mill Valley. We appreciate them very much. This is Scout Bartlett, and we're bringing the program to you for originating from our flagship station, KEST, broadcasting in San Francisco, USA, as well as internet all the way across the world on www.ifidknownthen.com. If you've come in a little late, this program will be archived a little later today right there on the ifidknownthen.com website, and you can join back and listen. We're talking this morning with Mark Swinney. Mark has actually been the president of the Church of Christian Science, First Church of Christ Science, and now is sharing with us stories. And Mark, the next question I'd like to move to is one that I ask, and you've referred to it a lot, but I want to explore it a little bit. How do you define that word prayer? Because you mentioned putting glasses back on the shelf as a form of prayer by bringing yourself back to a sense of connection with God and a sense of connecting with that love of all or love of everything. So how would you actually wrap around your own personal experience of what you mean by that word prayer?
Good question. Well, you know, I think in my own experience, I can talk about from my own background. I know there's prayer, and then there's effective prayer, and it seems like there's a kind of a difference. I know when
so
I
now we're first, talking the science part here.
Yeah, I think you're right. When early on, my prayers, I would have to say, my prayers are really I just was talking at God. I would just explain to God in detail what was wrong or what needed changing or maybe who needed changing, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And sometimes God would start to answer my prayer, but I'd just interrupt. I wouldn't listen. I would say that for prayer to me now is there's two halves to it. There's the receptivity. It's to listen, to be open, to be receptive to whatever God is going to give you, whatever kind of information. Then the biggest part next is to implement it. That's the key. Now, I mean, we're into kind of a big subject. You know, I think probably the listeners are saying, well, how do I know when God communicates with me? How do I actually
know? That's exactly what I wanted to ask. Define that word to listen.
Yeah, how does that work? Well, You heard when I was talking about praying while I was putting away those glasses on the shelf, I said that God gave me an answer, and that's to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and might. And I mentioned how I felt God's love along with the message, and that's the indicator. Now, for some people, they're going to hear God's answer in the form of words like that. You know, and that happens occasionally. You know, you'll get some specific idea, some specific words. Other times, though, God's answer to you might just be a better view of things, just a better picture of yourself or others. And you really just get a better view, but along with it, you feel that love. Other times, there are no words at all to it. What comes, it God's answer is just a feeling that all is well, that there's a feeling of well-being that comes over you. I remember reading once where Helen Keller, she said that the best things in the world cannot be seen or touched. They must be felt in the heart. I really like that. And it's that feel sometimes we get as an answer for prayer. There's no words to it, just a feeling. But no matter how God answers you, whether in the form of ideas, in the form of a better view of things, or maybe in that feeling, along with it, hand in hand, always comes a sense of God's love for you. And after this program, maybe some of our listeners will just take some time to remember occasions like that, where you get this feeling of well-being, and it's like a happy surprise, like you're opening a present, and there's such love that goes with it. So there you go. You know, you get your answer, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Then comes the work. It's time now to let it change you, because that's really what effective prayer is. It's when you take an idea and you let it change you. And because you talk to people sometimes. They may say they've prayed and they've just gotten the best answer, and the next day they can't even remember it because they didn't make it their life, so they didn't live it. I think about something beautiful in the Bible where you really see somebody do this, and this is interesting. It was when Jesus' mother, Mary, first learned that she was going to have a baby, when she was going to have Jesus, it was quite a surprise to her because, you know, she wasn't yet married to Joseph, and her culture at that time, if you were found pregnant, you know, without being married, you may be stoned, you may be killed, and she was quite worried when this great news came to her. All of a sudden, she's alone, and she hears, you know, you're going to have a baby, Mary, and then, you know, she asked, how could this be? And so God answers her in a question, really. This time it was in the form of words, but, you know, don't you believe that with God all things are possible? Oh, my goodness. Now, Mary could have responded in a lot of ways. She could have said, oh, that's beautiful. I'll have to think about that someday. You know, what a beautiful answer. With God all things are possible. Well, I think other people might understand that or believe it, but not me, at least not yet. No, that's not how Mary responded. Upon hearing that answer, with God, all things are possible, Mary's response and the way it changed her, it's one of the most beautiful things in the whole Bible. She said, behold, the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word. In other words, look at me. I'm the handmaid. I'm completely subservient to that message. Be it unto me according to that word, to thy word. And so you could see she just embraced it completely, giving up all her fears. And I think that is the hallmark of prayer. I love to go to God. You could tell from talking to me, we've only talked a half an hour or so, but I love to go to God. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing is this. It's to go to God with that open, receptive heart, willing to abandon what I used to be thinking or afraid of, and then embrace with all my heart whatever the new idea is, embrace it and show that I've embraced it by having my attitude, my whole outlook on life change. I find that the more I do that, the more answers I get when I'm praying.
So, Mark, we're talking this morning because we're originating on New Year's Eve Day, the last day of 2012. We're talking about a fresh look at setting priorities for the new year. And you told a story of your first job as a kid, washing dishes, and practicing a really good job of hating washing dishes for quite a long time before it dawned on you that maybe you could let that washing dishes become a practice of your love and your connection with God. And almost immediately after you did that, the manager of the restaurant called you in and said, would you rather be a busboy than a dishwasher? Where did you go from there? Were you able to sustain that practice of being God's love when you were out having to face real people?
Definitely. I mean, I would have to tell you, because I had the wrong what? I mean, think about that. I live with that pile of dishes every day, so it really got tattooed to me. You know, I really learned that lesson well, and I saw the value of doing that. And, you know, I don't know. There's nothing better, I think, than having almost a new birth on things like that, where you're just like a new person. I love those kind of times. And, you know, it goes setting the priority, loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and might. You know, that's the number one priority. We don't talk about it too much on this planet, but I really think it's the number one thing. Second, Jesus said, it's to love your neighbor as yourself. And, I've thought about that so much, what it really means to do that, what it is. I mean, I can be nice to people and all that, but what is that? How do I love my neighbor as myself, really in the highest level? And I think about that because, you know, Jesus talked about it. He said something interesting. He said, love one another as I have loved you.
Uh-huh.
Now, that really catches my eye because I think, okay, I can love a lot of people. There's a lot of ways to love. And some of the ways we love other people really isn't too pretty. We keep score when we love people. In other words, you know, we might show love to somebody, but it's only to get something, you know. Or it's conditional. Well, I'll love you if you behave the way I want you to, or stuff like that. And that I don't think is the way Jesus meant when he says love as I loved you.
It's not necessarily wired up as only love them when they're being good and you just had a wave of your love because you were in a good mood too.
Exactly. love should be like playing catch with a ball. You don't keep score, you just do it. You just go back and forth and just love. Well, I remember reading once about Mary Baker Eddy. You mentioned her right at the beginning. She's the author of that book. Her main work is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And I remember reading about an occasion when she was out with a friend to, she was going to a store to pick out some chairs for her house. And she got to this furniture store, and a man began helping, you know, showing them different chairs. And this man had a patch over his eye. Well, this man showed them different chairs, and they didn't select any, they didn't buy any that day, but they had some ideas, I guess, on what they wanted. Well, Mary Baker Eddy and her friend were walking home, and this friend asked Mary Baker Eddy, she said, you didn't really pay attention to what that man was doing or showing us or what he was saying. How come? And she answered with a question. She said, well, how could I think about chairs when that man was suffering? Well, the next day, that friend went back to the furniture store to order the chairs to be sent to Mary Baker Eddy's house. And the man was there, that same guy, but this time he wasn't wearing his patch. And he asked, he said, who was that woman? I had an abscess on my eye, but when you left, I looked under that patch and the abscess was gone. And, oh my goodness, I remember reading about that and I thought, that is how Jesus loved. He brought, you know, every moment was a moment in which he could bring the power of God to help people. Now, Scott, I got to tell you a story, how that affected me hearing that, because, oh my goodness. I mentioned, you know, I used to live there in the Bay Area. Now, I remember one time, not too long after getting my job as the in that restaurant, a couple years later, I bought a car. And I remember I was going to drive over to my girlfriend's house to show it to her. And, I know the listeners here are going to be hearing this from all over the world, but in the San Francisco Bay Area on the peninsula, one of the main freeways is Highway 101. And I was driving this car in the middle of the day, you know, in the morning and in the evening, Highway 101 can really, it could be really dense. There can be a lot of traffic.
Well, one this big is in parking the mid- lot.
One big parking lot. This was the middle of the day, though, and normally there would never be any traffic. Well, as I'm driving over to my girlfriend's house, I'm on Highway 101, and for some reason there's this huge traffic jam. Well, I was thinking about this thing I just mentioned to you about Mary Bickerity in that furniture store as I'm driving along, sitting there going, you know, bumper to bumper. And I could see way ahead up on the freeway that there were cars that were kind of making a little detour across the lanes, and then they would continue on at regular speed. Well, when I got up to that spot, I saw what the problem was. There was a big dog, a big black Labrador, that had been hit. He was still alive, and he was lying there on the freeway. And so I thought about, you know, Jesus, when he said, love one another as I have loved you. And I thought about Mary Bickerity in that furniture store, and I thought, well, here's an opportunity. And so I remember I pulled my car over to the side. I opened the door, and I walked across the lanes of that freeway, and then I picked up that big dog. And you know what he did? He bit me. He
yeah.
bit me. He bit me right in the face. And you know what? I knew, though, that he was just afraid,
yeah.
and he was in pain. And that's why he bit. And I remember putting my head right against his, and I carried him to my car. And I put him in there. You know, this was my new car. I was showing it to my girlfriend, and he was kind of a mess. But we started to pray together. When I say that, you know, I started praying for him. And it was the same kind of thing we've been talking about. You know, I didn't feel adequate in any way to be able to do anything on my own. I had to turn to God completely in order to help this dog. And I remember I looked on his collar. I saw, you know, where he lived. And so I decided that I was going to drive over. I knew kind of where that was. And I was driving that way, and so I'm praying along. And my love for the dog, you know, as much as I love that dog, that's not enough to help. You know, personal love, as strong as it is, just human love, you know, I don't know, that can't do much. But God's love, I knew that was, you know, so much more. But again, remember, God answers prayer by changing our thoughts. And so it's thought that that was the battleground. So I just allowed God to change my thoughts about the dog. And so I don't remember specifically how that was. It was a while back. But I do know that the oneness with God we all have was very evident, that this dog had not wandered onto a freeway outside of being at one with God. No. At every moment, that's how it was. Now, I got to the place where this dog lived, and I remember opening up the back door of the car, and he recognized where he was, and he got out, and we walked, and I could tell he was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that showed, one of those life-changing moments again. I saw now that I could see why Jesus would say the number two priority is to love your neighbor as yourself, and that was an example. But one more little thing. Since then, I've thought often about how that dog bit me when I picked him up. Because,
yes.
you know, sometimes people, when they are afraid or in
yes.
pain, they bite. They do. They bite. And
yes.
what is our answer? Our answer is to love. It's what we are just created to do. It's to express the love of God, to be transparent to that love of God. It's what we do. And so if those priorities to love God and to love our neighbor with God's love, if we just catch ourselves fulfilling those priorities, I think we're getting there. I think we're really making some progress. It'll be a
Absolutely.
Good new year.
Absolutely. And there's more I want to touch into, Mark. We're going to break away for just a second. I want to let everybody know that in the Bay Area, it's crisp and cold this morning, but dry. You don't need your umbrella, but you'll need to bundle up. And if you're like me, you'll need a hat for your little naked head. But no matter where on earth you are listening, it's a perfect day for you to be having a great day on purpose.
AM 1450 just for you. San Francisco.
Hey, anytime you hear that music, you know it's that special edition of Spiritual Perspectives. And anytime there's a fifth Monday in the month, we'll be here with Spiritual Perspectives. We're originating on our flagship station, KEST, in San Francisco, and at the same time, simulcast and archived on www.ifidknownthen.com, www.ifidknownthen.com. If you came in a little late on the program, a little later this afternoon, we'll have it archived right up onto the website. You can re-listen to it. But I want to reintroduce you. Our guest this morning is Mark Swinney. I am just having a blast. I'm sure you are, too. I want to let you know that you can find Mark online. In fact, if you Google him under S-W-I-N-N-E-Y, you'll find him right away. Or his website is all the W's, S-W-I-N-N-E-Y-C-S-B, like Christian Science, I don't remember what the B's were, .org. So S-W-I-N-N-E-Y-C-S-B.org. And Mark, one of the things we've been talking about is the whole notion of setting priorities for a new year. And you've been talking a lot about, without using the phrase that people are familiar with is unconditional love. And I know I return back to unconditional love means basically being that state of love regardless of circumstances. Now, I'd like to pick your brain because I know you think deeply about stuff. I've been working on this word for a while. I've got my own thoughts on it, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. How do you go after the word forgiveness? Because it's very clear that this is not for you about, well, all right, you've done that and I'll get over it because I'm the bigger person, but I'm going to remember. How do you work with that word forgiveness, Mark?
Boy, I love the word.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard word, really, mm-hmm. when you first hit on it, because just to forgive, you can think of it on the level of, well, yes, I have been harmed, I've been damaged, or something like that. Something's been taken from me. And you might then say, okay, well, I definitely should forgive this person, but I'm going to remain damaged or
right.
victimized.
Right,
you know,
plus all my dog influencers are there. I want to bite back.
Of course. And that, I would say that, you know, to hold a grudge, some of the nicest people you ever meet are holding deep grudges.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you can carry a grudge. You can make it a lifestyle, really, just having a grudge. And it then affects everything in your life. It really, I mean, we both met people that way. That is, that's something that to think through. And you know what? If I then just say, well, okay, I'm damaged, I forgive you, well, maybe I'm not holding a grudge, but I'm not that much better off. I'm still damaged. You know, I'm still victimized or I've lost something, whatever. I think real forgiveness is to recognize that another person's behavior didn't have the power to deprive you of the goodness and love of God.
Mm.
That's the big picture. See, your oneness with God is your best, your most important possession. And in that oneness, you have everything you need. Now, when I say oneness with God, let me go more, because we've discussed that a little bit.
Yes.
It's not like you are God, but you are the outcome, the expression of God. You know how maybe some of the readers in the Bible have, readers of the Bible have seen where God says, where it says that God made man in his image and likeness. You know, that image and likeness idea, it's an important one. When I first heard it, I thought to be God's likeness or to be God's image meant I was God's spitting image or something like that. You know, I was just a little miniature or something. I didn't like
yeah.
that. You know, have you ever gone to a museum and you hear somebody looking at a painting or a photograph, you hear them say, oh, you know, that's a good likeness of so-and-so. Well, that has always helped me to understand what I am. In my oneness with God, likeness or image, that means face, F-A-C-E. It means face. You could think of yourself as the likeness, the literal expression on the face of God, who is love. It's not like there's some physical, anthropomorphic God. I remember I went to San Mateo High School. I remember one of my teachers, in class, he had this permanent sign above the chalkboard. It said, "Beware of anthropomorphism." It said, but that, I thought that was a funny thing to have in a school like that. But anyway, and that's when you assign human-like traits to something that isn't human. And often we do that with God. You know, we think of God as some sort of, you know, anthropomorphic, you know, Zeus-type character with a long beard.
And that's a bad attitude.
Yeah, you're right. And it turns out God is ever-present love. As the Bible says, it's God is spirit. And you can't put a beard on love or spirit. But anyway, you are the likeness on the expression. You're the face, the expression on the face of divine love, you could say. That's what it means to be God's likeness. So you are the proof that God is present. Wherever you are listening to this, you're the proof that God is present there with you. You're actually God's likeness. Now, nothing can change that. There isn't anybody in the world that can take that from you. There isn't anyone who can make it deteriorate. There's no event that can change it. Your whole history is not a history of anything but your oneness with God. That is it. And so true forgiveness is to recognize that. I know someone's truly forgiven when I see that they didn't harm me and they couldn't have, that they'd have to get through God to even reach me, and they can't. And so true forgiveness, it's a wonderful thing, and it's worth doing, because, you know, people sometimes they carry a grudge for a while, they set it down maybe, then they pick it right up again. If you find yourself thinking about some grudge over and over again, maybe tell God, say, "God, I'm ready to let this go for good." And then say, "God, what should I think about instead?" And that's your first moment of prayer. It's taking your first step. And in your oneness with God, you embrace what God gives you. You know, that's such a good way to pray sometimes. Because often, I know all of our listeners, we have maybe a repetitive fear or maybe a resentment, any of those things. Sometimes you take those repetitive ideas, just take a moment, write them down on a piece of paper and say, "God, here it is. I'm ready to let it go. What should I think about instead?" And then just be so quiet, and then write down whatever God gives you. And you'll feel God's love along with the answer. And don't make it a big, hard thing. It's natural for God to give you answers all day long. It says in the Bible that God's angels, are there's legions of angels. There's, you know, there's lots of them all day long. And never think you're pestering God when you're praying. Don't think that, because you. I find the more I ask God for help, the more I'm given, and it's fun to do that. So anyway, that's a long answer about forgiveness, but
no,
it's
perfect.
Important.
You know, one of the things we've been teaching in the show that we do the rest of the Mondays of the month when we do Life Insights Live, I've been talking to people a lot about. Take every time that you have to wait, whether it's the microwave, the elevator, the crosswalk, the red light, traffic has stopped and isn't moving, and take those moments, and then we do a little tiny meditation of reconnection. But I think this would fit back together, is use those little waits in life as a cue to come back to that sense of connectedness, that state of connectedness. And so does that fit with how you do your practices?
Scout, you and I are two peas in a pod. Yes, let me tell you about a really funny one I'm doing lately. you'll like it.
We've got about a minute and a half.
Okay, you know how when you're waiting to pay for your groceries at the grocery store?
Yes.
Right there in front of where you're standing there, waiting, you're putting your stuff there on the place to pay, there often are tabloid magazines. And those tabloid magazines are just facing you right there as you're waiting for everything to pay for everything. And so that's the time I say, you know what, I'm not even going to look at those tabloid magazines. That's my moment today where I am going to feel my oneness with God. Now, here's something that your readers will love. Often you tell your friends, feel God's love, but you rarely do it for yourself. Try this. Take a time to let God really love you. It's not selfish to do that. Just do it. Let God God love you, and then let God love you so much that it overflows out of you into everyone else in the room around you. Just feel God's love doing that. And that's what I'm doing there at the grocery store. Instead of looking at the tabloid, I let God love me, and then I feel God's love just overflow like water flowing out of a glass, just overflow into everyone else in the room. Now, catch yourself doing that. If you did that once a month, you've set a priority for the new year that I know will pay off. But you won't be satisfied with once a month, though. You're going to start doing it all the time. Maybe when you look in the rearview mirror of your car or other times, and you just take a moment, let God just love you. It's not a selfish thing to do. It's not a waste. Let God do it, and then let feel it overflow into just everyone in the world.
Oh, what a privilege. Mark, this hour has gone entirely too fast for me. This has been a delight, and I have to say that while there's languaging and landmark differences in our paths, I agree. I think your path and mine and how we've been approaching things overlaps more than I could even describe. So just let me thank you so much for taking this time to be with us this morning, and we'll thank Renee, your wife, as well, for sort of freeing you up so that we could chat with you. We appreciate it, Mark, and I hope you've had a good time.
It was a treat. Thank you so much. Good to talk with you.
What a pleasure. And this has been Spiritual Perspectives. We originate from our flagship station, KEST, in San Francisco, every time there's a fifth Monday or a special event. And it's Spiritual Perspectives, looking at life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'm your host, Scout Bartlett, and this show has been simulcast on www.ifidknownthen.com. If you'll go in and log into the site, go into the radio, you'll be able to find this show and many other shows in our radio archives. But most of all, I'd like to ask every single one of you two favors. One, I'd like to ask that you treat yourselves as a loved one, because you truly are. And second, no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose.
Novartis reminds you to take time out of your busy holiday schedule to give the gift of